You are listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm David Wax.
And we're going to get right into it. David, what is your hot take?
The silent killer of LTV is complacency after conversion.
I am so excited to have this conversation because the number of people who do not seem to understand this, or they understand it on like a theoretical level, but they're not willing to do what it takes to do something about it.
Yeah.
Is astounding. So tell us more about that. If someone is not familiar with kind of that post-sales experience, what do you mean by complacency after the close?
You know, I think everybody is so focused on acquiring new customers. I mean, acquiring new customers is sexy. You have sales dashboards built out that show your funnel and your close rate, and you can easily track how every conversion happens. But people do not pay the same attention to keeping those customers after the sale. It's all about let's get another sale. And there's kind of this missing infrastructure with customer retention and customer growth. So, you know, it's my belief and my company's belief that, you know, really retention kind of starts at really even at first contact, even before the sale. But after the sale, you really have to have design dashboards and processes to both grow that client, but just really just retain them as well. And there's a lot of things that go into it. Number one is just frequent touch points. You know, your customers, everybody thinks that when you sell a client, they're yours for life. But people are very quick to forget. They're very quick to move to the next thing. You need to continually sell them through kind of tying into their emotions. People buy emotionally. So for us, we believe this means sending handwritten notes to them, complex text messaging, email campaigns, but really reaching out to people in multiple ways to show that you care about them, not spamming them, making sure that, you know, these touch points are meaningful and not just volumeful, you know, full of doing it over and over again. So, yeah. You know, you kind of have to walk the line there, but really trying to reach out in meaningful ways that show you care and show that you appreciate their purchase. Because in today's day and age of abundance, yeah, they could have purchased from you, but they could have purchased from a million others. They could have gone straight to Alibaba or straight to Upwork. And the fact that they chose you, you know, that says a lot, and you need to really thank them for that.
I have already taken what feels like a whole page of notes because there's so many important things that you said in there. One of the things that popped into my head as you were talking about, you know, the fact that closing a deal is sexy and retaining a deal is not.
Right.
And I think part of that is the same phrase that I have said to a million people that I'm now kind of kicking myself for repeating this propaganda is that it is easier to keep a customer than to get a new one.
Correct.
And cheaper. But I also think that that is just a cop out. And if we in our minds say, oh, it's so much harder to win a new deal, so therefore we have to celebrate every new deal, and it's easy to keep a customer, so therefore when you lose one, you failed the easy task. You failed the bunny slope, the easy level. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's true, but I think a lot of us have bought into that subconsciously of it's so much work to get a new customer. And it's so easy to keep that customer. And when you lose that customer, you failed the basics.
Yeah. And, you know, there's so many little things you can do to ensure, you know, I think the number one thing that happens with a lot of customers is you lose them at onboarding. You know, if you're running a SaaS business or any sort of service-based business, you bring them on, you perform the initial task, and then you say, okay, take it from here. And you expect them to call you when they need something versus proactive outreach. And, you know, this is very difficult at scale because, you know, I run a company, we've got tens or hundreds of thousands of clients. Trying to stay on them in a meaningful way and just check in is very difficult. But the better you can do that, the more likely you are to win. So you really have to make, you have to create incentive structures for this. You know, the reason but getting the next sale in is so sexy is also you're paying out commissions on that. So Right. There's this direct one-to-one correlation there, and people want to chase that cheese. But keeping clients, you know, yeah, there might be a little retention bonus or something like that, but people kind of, you know, they're, it's hard for businesses to keep those financial incentives in place for the team. So there's a lot of reasons why it's very difficult, but we all have to remind ourselves that it's much cheaper, much more profitable to keep a client than get a new one.
And I think there's a lot of small things that are fairly cost effective that we can do along the way. I sat in on a strategy session where they were doing a win back campaign, basically customers they expected that were about to churn. And they had a plan of how are we going to win this customer back because the renewal is impending and we suspect that they're on their way. But there was a lot of discussion about all of the things that they would have done differently leading up to the need for that win back. That if they would have just done this simple thing or that simple activity or done this outreach, small things that wouldn't have cost them anything, they wouldn't be spending all this money on a win back consultant and a win back campaign that they might ultimately not see results from.
Well, I think every customer service interaction requires kind of a win back because with, you know, those can be your strongest clients if you do it appropriately. If somebody calls into customer service or they go to your chat bot on your website, they're not doing it because they've got free time on their hands and they don't know what, right, you know, how to do it. They're doing it because they have a problem. Okay. So you have a problem there that you need to solve. And then the second there's a secondary problem, which is the time for them to get on the phone and call you. So now not only do you have a problem, but you're double downing on that by forcing them to pick up the phone or go into chat when everybody is so freaking busy now, you know, so you have two problems on your hands. You need to go above and beyond after that customer service experience and follow up a week later, a month later, whatever it is, with multiple touch points to ensure that that customer feels handled. So for my company, we focus on handwritten notes because we believe everybody's getting too many emails, too many texts, and nobody's reading any of it. Yeah. So we have a client. They are a snack box company. They send snacks to your office. When they screw up, they send another box of snacks, obviously, but a handwritten note apologizing for the mistake that just happened. What they found was those that had the poor experience followed by the win back of the good box of snacks actually had a higher lifetime value than those that were never screwed up with in the first place.
Yeah.
So then what did they decide to do? Screw up with everybody and provide everybody that win back experience to raise all ships. And that's exactly what they did to great success. So, you know, I'm not saying you should screw up with your clients, but you should identify those moments of friction and then double friction, because then they had the bad event and now they have to call you, and calling and sitting on the phone is another bad event that you really have to follow up with them. In my own personal life, I just put in a new backyard barbecue island. And I ordered some parts from a barbecue place, barbecueguys.com. Some of them came all banged up. You know, it's an expensive purchase. Yeah. And so I called them. They had new parts to me the next day, which was amazing. I was thrilled. They said, don't even bother shipping back the old stuff. Just donate it or whatever. And then like a week later, they called me again. And they said, we just wanted to make sure everything was okay. Your new barbecue is good. I was blown away. So the fact that they kind of, you know, followed up on it, it wasn't just another transaction, but they followed up a week later. I you know, now they have a customer for life. So it doesn't even have to cost much. It can be as cheap as a phone call or a handwritten note, but it really does make a huge impact.
Well, and in that, you know, they could have very easily blamed the shipping company. How many times have we heard like, yeah, that's FedEx's problem. So I'm taking it up with FedEx. I hope you had insurance on that package. I actually had something just like that. I was in college and we're all poor as shit. And we're buying these $250 textbooks. And my textbook, I ordered a textbook off of, I think it was Amazon, but it was through one of their third party sellers. And I received an empty envelope, essentially. And they had put my hardcover textbook in essentially like a package hybrid. Yeah. Right. Something that it shouldn't have been in. And it was just empty. It was ripped open. So I reached out to the seller and they're like, oh, well, you didn't have insurance on this package. So reach out to the post office. And I was literally like, are you kidding me? I just spent $250 on a textbook and you're going to tell me like, and of course I'm like 18, so I'm a child. I didn't even know how to have this conversation. So then I had to reach out to Amazon. It became a whole big thing. And it wasn't Amazon's fault per se, because it was a third party provider, but it colored my opinion of Amazon for years. Even though it wasn't their fault, it became their problem. In the same way that even though your barbecue parts wasn't their fault, it became their problem and they owned it.
Yeah, no. And, you know, that is, I'm considerably older than you, Alyssa. And I'll tell you, I think, and I don't want to sound like an old, grumpy old guy here, I think there's something that's happened with your generation, or maybe a little older than your generation, where people don't take responsibility. And
yes, they
shift the blame. And, you know, I don't know. It's the same thing with this entitlement of, oh, of course they bought from me. But it also extends to not taking responsibility when things go wrong. And if you take the responsibility, magical things happen. I can kind of give you two personal examples of how I've fucked up. One, at my last company, I ran a text messaging company for 12 years. We had clients like the circus, when there was a circus, Ringling Brothers, and Cirque du Soleil. And, early on, we ran a promotion where the company that owns the circus also owned, Disney on Ice. And we ran a promotion where you could text in at the circus for tickets to Disney on Ice. And it was supposed to give away one set of tickets to everybody that texted in that night.
Right. A great cross-sell opportunity. Mm-hmm.
Introduce one, you know, announce, hey, you know, audience, you could win a family four pack to Disney on Ice. Well, I screwed up. We were a small company at the time, and I forgot to put the limit on the number of tickets that were available. So everybody in the audience who texted in won a family four pack to Disney on Ice. The circus called me. I immediately said, give them the tickets and my company will pay for them. And we ended up buying hundreds of tickets to Disney on Ice, but then Fell, the parent company, the company that owns Disney on Ice and Monster Jam and all that stuff, they used us for years and years and years, as long as we were, because they realized we did the right thing. Another example is, luckily I don't have these examples for my new company, but the last company, we were running a promotion for Elizabeth Arden Spas. And, you know, these text campaigns, it would be like text spa to the number 12345. Yeah. And my account manager gave the wrong number to the spa. And they had all these signs printed up in like 35 or 40 locations nationwide. So I sent my team around to each of those 40 locations with a new poster, flowers and gifts for the store. And we all around the United States, we apologized for this issue. And again, that became a client for life and a referral for life, where they referred us on. So if you own up to your mistake, you know, there's kind of, and this is kind of off topic of the silent killer of LTV is complacency, but it's tangentially related. If you own your mistake, you over correct on it, and then you never do it again. That's kind of my framework for fixing mistakes. And that's how you also get clients for life. But you can also apply this just to any customer service experience. Just make sure you over fix the experience and make sure the client is super happy. And, you know, it really does make a huge difference, because people forget what an inconvenience it is to call into customer service. Even if that customer service rep is the nicest, sweetest person on the planet, nobody wants to waste their time on that.
No, and that's not what they hired you for, right? Whether you're a software provider or service provider, that's not what they hired you for. There's almost like this invisible equation that we all have with our services. And my level of effort that I put in has to be less than the level of value that I get out. So if that ratio starts to approach a 1-to-1 or worse, it's more effort for the value that I get. I am moving on.
You're out.
Like, yeah. And that effort is my perception of my effort and my perception of the value that I'm getting. And so you have to make sure that you are seeing any friction that I have as your customer, and making sure that I see that you see it that you've put a name to it and that you're ready to take ownership of it, that will I will give you more grace because I think you maybe care about me as a customer than if you just say, even if you fix it, but you never recognize the fact that it was friction in the first place and try to gaslight me that it was not really that big of a deal.
Yeah, we during COVID, now everybody's emotions were heightened during COVID. So this is going to be an exaggerated response, hopefully these days. But we handwritten, my company provides post-customer service follow-up to a flat box furniture company. You know, you go on their website, you buy the furniture, it arrives to your house flat and you got to assemble it. Well, a woman called in and needed assembling help and the rep fixed the problem and then used our service to send a handwritten note follow-up saying, you know, we're happy to know that we solved your issue. Please call me anytime if you have any further issues. And then that handwritten note went out. Well, 2 weeks later, that person called in crying to customer service because, you know, this again is during COVID and emotions are exaggerated, but people are alone and they don't feel cared for. So anything you do that shows that you care, it's going to drive an emotional response. Now, hopefully it's not going to make that person burst into tears if that's not what you're looking to do. But back then it did. And I still feel the experience is somewhat the same in that you're hitting the person where it counts and letting them know, hey, you know, we spent 5 minutes on the phone or 10 minutes on the phone. I understand the time that that took and let's, you know, let me thank you for that time and thanks for being a client. And we see that all the time too.
So let's talk more about that because I would love to hear your thought process on, you know, in a digital world, in the world of AI, in this hyper personalization, always connected, yeah, always on universe that we live in, why handwritten?
Yeah. So, you know, again, I've been in messaging with texting and now handwritten notes since 2004. So 21 years. And what I've seen is the digital proliferation is exploding, right? Everybody's answer to their marketing funnel is send another email, send another AI email. And everybody's answer to their sales funnel is send another cold email. And, you know, people, yeah, it's great because it's free. It doesn't cost anything to send an email or it's asymptotically free, but you know, the consumer is losing interest fast. They don't have time. You know, they receive 135 emails a day. How much time do you want to spend just managing your inbox? And I think if you're like me, you just delete the messages before you read them. You read maybe the subject line and delete because, yeah, you know, it's all just spam anyway. So handwritten was formed to try to create a more emotional tie to the customer. And really the number one use case is saying thank you. And, you know, if you want to send thank you at scale and make sure everybody gets thanked appropriately, handwritten notes automated are really the only way to do it. And we're proud to be the largest provider of the service in the world. But it doesn't have to just be thank you. You know, there can be cold outreach and birthday cards and this time of year, holiday cards and that type of thing. But it's really just about getting in front of that client 2 to 4 touch points a year, just to let them know that they matter and to break through the din of communication. You know, the least used inbox is the one at the end of your driveway. It's not email, it's not text. So it's, you know, yes, of course you need to be an email, but you're going to be in that pile of hundreds of emails a day versus the average person only gets 2 to 3 handwritten notes a month. So you can be in a very short stack pile as well as that huge pile. And the 1-2 punch of that handwritten note is not only are you in that short stack, but people buy with emotion. You know, people think, oh, everything's a logical buy. No, you got to hit their pain point and hit them with emotion. And handwritten notes naturally do that. They hit that emotional core much more readily and much easier than an email or a text. I mean, when was the last time somebody thanked you for marketing to them, right? But that happens when you send somebody a handwritten note. They reach you back. Oh, thank you so much for this handwritten note. It's really just marketing.
there was a, in a previous life, we were a political research company. We did research on campaigns and and particularly how people would consume this information and how it impacted their decision-making ability, not necessarily like for partisan issues, but just the human psychology of decision-making. And one of the things that I found fascinating that I think you will probably have a lot to share on is the generational divide in receiving direct mail. And it went the exact opposite way that I expected. I expected that Gen Zers and millennials would want to do everything in a digital first environment. And the Gen X and the boomers would be more apt to the mailbox. But it went the other way. Gen Z and millennials reported that they view direct mail as more credible, as more legitimate, because in their mind, it was harder to do. So therefore, you wouldn't waste your time on doing it if you weren't a serious option. And for them, they can create a Facebook ad. They can write a Facebook post. They can do all of these digital things because they're digital natives. But to them, the idea of printing something out, writing on it, putting a stamp on it, going to the mailbox, well, that's real effort. So therefore, you must be legitimate. And that was not the perception of the older generation.
Yeah, handwritten notes show a deeper investment in time.
Yes.
And that's what they're latching onto, that time element. I was in a meeting with a luxury brand, and they were saying the closest thing to receiving a handwritten note is when you walk into a meeting and somebody puts their phone face down on the table, because then they're focused on you and only you. So, you know, I do see that. We have clients for Gen Z and younger that they'll send you handwritten notes, and then they find people post them to Instagram, they post them to Twitter, because, you know, this generation is sensory deprived. They didn't grow up, you know, you're basically operating on the sense of sight, no sense of touch. And handwritten notes at least hit the sense of touch. So, you know, that tactile nature. Additionally, it's less, you know, it sticks around. It sits on your table. You can't, you know, you know, once you get a handwritten note, it's going to sit there for a bit on your desk or whatever. And what we do as a company is we send out handwritten notes, and then we say, hey, did you receive my handwritten note? They say, yeah, I have it sitting right here. So we say, great. When are we going to sign you up? You know, it works, right? Like, handwritten communication, and I'd say even more than print, but, you know, there's a cost element there too, and I can talk to you about that. But handwritten notes really kind of get by the filter of junk mail. They just completely skirt that filter, and they create memorable moments of, gee, what did this person have to send me? And then it's a card from your favorite fashion brand, and you open it up and you spend the time reading it versus a glossy piece, which you may or may not, you know, depending on the novelness of it for you and how hyper-personalized it is. So, you know, it creates tremendous results for our clients. And you know, again, I'm not saying only send handwritten notes, that would be insane. But if you create a multi-touch program involving email, maybe text, phone calls, and handwritten notes, I think you're going to end up with better results. And in fact, we did a survey. We've done it twice now. We did a survey of 2,000 consumers, not handwritten related, just consumers. We asked them, do they feel appreciated by brands? And what's sad is in 2025, only 12% of consumers feel appreciated by the brands they work with. This is down from 2022 when it was 18%. So it's dropped by a third. And we said, well, what would you do if you felt appreciated by brands? And they said, we would buy more. We would buy more frequently. So we would spend more and spend more often. We would rate and review more, and we would tell our friends more often. So it's all the stuff you want to hear. And we said, great, what would make you feel appreciated by brands? And we showed that, you know, we said phone calls, text message, email, postcard in the mail, or handwritten note. And by and large, the number one answer was sending a handwritten note. So, you know, you can spend a dollar or two on these and just get outsized returns just by letting your clients know and your customers know that they matter to you. And that content, you just have to make sure the content in the handwritten note isn't gross. You know, don't be like, visit this website and use this coupon code. Just say thank you, you know? Just say thank you. We appreciate your business. maybe on the back of the card or something, have something printed that says, visit the website and get 20% off, but don't put that in your note. You know, keep your note sincere.
You know, considering all of the people that you know or aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be listening to?
I'm actually a big fan of Brittany Hodak, if you know who she is. She wrote a book called Creating Superfans, which are probably somewhere on my desk, have a copy of, if I could find it. But she's an excellent, she's underrated.
Well, I will have to check her out. And if someone is connecting with you, they want to learn more, they're ready to add handwritten notes to their marketing mix, where can they find you online?
Yeah, you can visit our website, handwritten.com, and it's spelled handwryttn.com. Or you can follow me, DBWACHS, DBWAX on Instagram, and connect with me on LinkedIn, David Wax on LinkedIn. And that's pretty much it.
Well, thank you, David, for coming on the show today. This was a really exciting conversation.
Thank you, Alyssa.